Andy, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm excited to learn. It's going to be a very big learning experience for me, and I hope for our listeners as well. For our listeners out there who don't know about you and your background, can you tell us about what you do in public adjusting?
Yeah, first of all, thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure. And yeah, my name is Andy. I'm with Awfully Adjusting. We are a licensed public adjusting team. So we advocate for the insured. In the state, we're licensed. We're able to represent the insured, work their claim, get them a max settlement, negotiate everything, handle different aspects of the claim, and basically be the main person that takes that claim from A to Z, give another client the time to free up, handle other investments. And then once the settlement is, they can start with the repairs with, again, much higher settlement than they would have received with that one.
Awesome. Great. So can you tell us about the principles of adjusting and like what an adjuster actually does in when it comes to an insurance claim, how they kind of play into the whole process?
Yeah. So we are licensed, and with our license, what we can do is we can technically take your claim. We can negotiate everything that's in the policy. We can negotiate the depreciation, the damage. We can handle personal property, meaning if all the stuff in the home was burnt, we can inventory it. We can negotiate it. Same with the structure. We can go in, write our estimates, prepare all the documents, negotiate that aspect of the claim, additional living, or any other coverages, whether it's business or commercial policies. We can handle all that. So basically, we act kind of like an attorney for that claim, for that person, and can handle everything. Basically from calling the claimant to negotiating the last penny.
Okay. So you were telling me before we started recording about how insurance companies, they have their own adjusters, but they don't really want insurance policy holders to know that there are public adjusters out there. Like that kind of makes sense intuitively, but why? And then also what like rights do we have as insurance policy holders to bring in a public adjuster?
So you have to remember, and you have to start with, the insurance company is in the they're a business, right? So they're in it to make money. So everyone that works for them is technically getting paid by them, right? Whether it's the agent, whether it's the desk adjuster, the field adjuster, whether it's any vendors, everyone's kind of working for the insurance company. And they have all these guidelines and all these, you know, restrictions of we don't do this, we don't pay for this, and anything they can do to minimize a claim. Whereas a public adjuster, on the other hand, is there to maximize that entire claim process for you. So you have to think about it that they're not going to tell you that you can hire a public adjuster, just like in a car accident. The insurance company's not going to say, hey, you should get an attorney against us. Like, no one's going to tell you that you can actually get some help. Right. But the departments have in almost every state, there's a public adjuster department or a public adjuster licensing. And that's what they're there for, to help and represent and help the insured, because, you know, the department saw what was going on with the insurance companies taking advantage of the insureds. So now there is actually licensing for adjusters like us on the other side. And what we're seeing now, every year, more and more adjusters that used to work for the insurance company are coming to the good side. I mean, every year there's just more and more just leaving the insurance company because they just can't. I mean, they can't take it. So they're coming back on this side and trying to help policyholders.
Okay. So how do you really play into the process? I mean, so, you know, when you need to make a claim, right, you call your insurance company, and I think most people kind of just let the insurance company take it from there. But at what point should someone, if they're wanting to work with a public adjuster, at what point should they start talking to a public adjuster?
Yeah. Well, what the mistake people make is they call us too late, right? They always want to say, well, my agent said they're going to handle it. My adjuster said they're going to take care of everything. And when they call us 3 months later, like, hey, I'm getting investigated. My claim's delayed. You know, they still haven't paid me anything. Well, what's going on, right? And all this stuff's been happening. So sometimes they're calling too late. As an investor, as a landlord, you should have a public adjuster on your team, just like you have attorneys, just like you have an agent and all these other people, management companies, contractors. You should have a public adjuster, because as soon as something happens, he should be your first point of contact so he can walk through their loss. And even first of all, start with telling you, is it a covered loss? Is it a loss you want to handle? Right? Because we'll have some of our larger investors and clients call us and say, hey, is this covered or can we file this? And we'll advise them. We'll look at the damage. We'll say, you know, because of your deductible, don't even file. There's nothing to file here, right? You're better off not filing this claim. So we do all that, right? And same thing with reading policies. you know, we'll take policies before they file claims and interpret policies and make sure that our clients don't have any, you know, lag in coverage, that they're actually covered for everything that can happen and any exposed liabilities they have.
Okay. So,
the answer is, you know, call a PA right away. That would be the answer.
Maybe before you call the insurance company, sounds like is your suggestion.
100%.
Okay. Okay. So what would you say is the main value add? Is it just general advice? Is it getting essentially more for the insurance policy holder when they have, you know, a valid claim? Is it you know, accelerating the process, all of the above? Like, what's the main benefit?
So you just knocked out all of the above, right? Whether it's you know, taking all the stress off the insured, right? So they can do other stuff. Because you don't, the amount of stress and the amount of stuff they put on you is someone that doesn't handle this every day. It's a whole new game. So just that. And everything else you mentioned, but the biggest thing is at the end, the settlement that you get is so much larger that when you're done, when we're done and our insured receives a check and he starts hiring contractors, you know, he's left with, you know, a significantly more in his, you know, in his pocket than if he was without us. That's just the end of the story. Even after paying a public adjuster, all our clients will pay their contractors, will pay us, and they still have leftover money for other investments.
Okay. So that brings up a topic that I wanted to discuss, right? None of us are in business for free, right? We all are here to get paid. So how are you compensated in this whole situation?
Yep. Taking a quick break to tell you about our free video course for real estate investors. It's 7 red flags in passive real estate investing. It's a free 7-day video course available at passiverealestatecourse.com. And you can use the link in the description to get there. Back to the show.
Public adjusters are all the same, pretty much the same structure. It's all contingent, right? So we do a 10% fee when we get hired right from the beginning. It's a 10% flat fee that gets paid once the claim is settled. So the insured doesn't owe us any upfront money, any retainers, any hidden costs. Once the claim is settled, whatever that final settlement is, once they get the check, that's when they pay us a 10% fee. Now, if an insured would call us and let's say they received an offer and they didn't know about a public adjuster and we look it over, we say we can help you. You know, we're not going to charge you on the money you received, but we'll take this claim. We know we could bring so much value and we'll charge a higher fee, but based only on a new amount that we would help our client receive.
Okay. Okay. So you mentioned a few mistakes that folks make in these cases, whether it's they kind of call you too late in the process, they need help. How often is it that they just didn't have the right insurance in the first place? They were just underinsured and they didn't necessarily realize it because they didn't get the best advice on the front end.
We see that every other claim you see people underinsured or have lack coverage. Whether it's, you know, whether they have an exclusion that they weren't aware of or they didn't purchase an endorsement that they should have had, or their policy coverages, all their limits are lower than they're supposed to be. There's just a different avenues that people just lack in. Because again, if you're not in this, industry, you know, you wouldn't know. So you usually don't know this stuff until you actually have a claim.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm certainly not an expert on insurance, and I need to leverage, you know, the expertise of the experts in these areas. So how small of a claim or of a deal or of an insurance policy is too small to really bother with? Does that make sense? Because we like to invest in big multifamily deals. We get the benefits of scale and all that kind of a thing. But if you're doing smaller deals, single families, that kind of a thing, is that not really big enough to justify?
No, any claim, I mean, there's PAs that work small claims, you know, 10 to 15, 20,000. You know, our firm is more large loss. So for residential, we would do maybe fire, large fire losses, you know, pipe breaks if the whole house has water damage. And then mostly commercial, right? Mostly commercial roofing, commercial fires, commercial water damage, anything along those lines, business policies is where we really specialize in.
Okay. Okay. So we've talked a little bit about people who have kind of filed their own claims and you made mistakes along the way. For those out there who are, you know, thinking about it, if you will, what are some of the do's and don'ts of filing your own insurance claim?
My biggest advice to everyone who wants to handle on their own, and we don't recommend it, but if you do, don't say too much, don't talk too much. Stay as little as possible. And really, that advice will go a long way. Because unfortunately, honesty now is getting people denied. They're just saying too much, right? They start going back. And the insurance company records everything from the first time you call them. So if you start talking, you start talking about all these other scenarios, they just start raising flags. And all of a sudden, you're under oath for no reason. Because all you did was you said the wrong thing or you sent them the wrong thing. So the less you do, the better it is. Now, you still have to cooperate with everything they ask you. But people, again, try to do too much, and it ends up hurting them.
Okay. So they say too much. People say too much when they call insurance companies. Is there also an area in which, getting estimates, coming up with ideas of what damages cost or hiring the wrong contractors, those kinds of things that where people make big missteps?
Dude, the insurance company will let you, they'll send their adjuster out whether he does an estimate or not. And if he does, then you'll get an estimate from their adjuster. But then what they'll say is, hey, you should get 3 estimates from your contractor. Now you start getting estimates. Then they'll take the lowest one and they'll say, well, this one is not broken down in our program, so we don't care. So all of a sudden you did all this work, you wasted 3 months and nothing happened. They're still at their amount. You're still at the same point because the contractor is doing a retail estimate. As a public adjuster, we're putting an estimate to make you whole, to put you exactly in the same situation you were before, because that's what you're owed for, nothing less, right? And nothing more. So you call them contractors and all that, that should be in your back pocket. Whatever prices you're getting from contractors and all that, that should be in your pocket. A PA is the only one that should be giving you an estimate, or a professional estimator that's using the same software, because then you're playing this in the same ballpark as an insurance company. They use a software called Xactimate. Some are switching to another one called Simbility. And they're just softwares that generate, that help their guidelines for building estimates. But their line item, and again, that's what we use. So when we're sending that to the insurance company and negotiating, we're on the same level playing field. Whereas if you're a contractor, I was a contractor before, I had no clue what I was looking at. If you send me one of those estimates, I have no idea what that was. Because when you're a contractor and you go into your home, let's say you had a fire, I'm just going to go, all right, remove or gut this room, install new drywall, paint it, and that's it. I'm not putting linear feet. I'm not measuring. I'm putting a total price. I'm not pricing each line amount. So, but that's what the insurance companies want to do, because that way they can negotiate each little item.
Okay. So you're saying to make sure, confirm my understanding, you're saying that it's better to utilize the estimation software that is available to adjusters rather than try to work with contractors to get estimates, because the insurance companies tend to haggle over the contractor's line items a bit more.
Correct. And, in most states, a contractor cannot negotiate a claim. Only a licensed public adjuster can. So then you're getting these estimates and you can't even have the contractor back it up. And remember, the contractor's only thinking in terms of, what's the easiest way? What's in terms of, okay, I got to replace these carpets. I'll replace them with just flooring. And they start doing stuff that, they think is going to be the easiest to remodel this whole unit. And when the insurance company gets that estimate, they're looking at it and they're saying, well, this is not what you had before. So this estimate is not even real. It's fake. And again, it just delays the claim process. So the advice to an insured is, if you do have a fire, you do have any kind of loss, if you're not going to hire a public adjuster, is to call. Again, say as little as possible. Tell them it's a large loss, because they're going to set a reserve too when you call. So you kind of want to, don't say, I just had a fire in the bedroom and everything else is okay. You want to kind of accept that, hey, there's smoke everywhere, that there's smoke in the attic, because that's going to set your reserve much higher. And then if you don't want, you don't want to hire a contractor, you can meet with their adjuster when he comes on site. But, walk with that adjuster and see what he's writing and see the experience, because most of the adjusters now are very inexperienced. So then when you see their estimate, it's not what you talked about, or it's switched over, or just missing a lot of items, then you'll see for yourself, hey, I need help.
Okay. So the inexperience of adjusters brings up an important topic of selecting a public adjuster if you so choose to work with one. Now, obviously, we've got, you know, Andy standing with us today sharing all this knowledge, but you're not licensed in every state. Maybe folks want to, you know, shop around a little bit. So if we're trying to be objective, if folks are out there, they want to select a public adjuster to work with, they want to shop around, what are some things that they should look for?
Yeah, obviously, you can search your local public adjusters. Remember, a lot of them are, every public adjuster, I think, specializes in his own. There's public adjusters that do roofing, residential roofing. They specialize in that. And some do maybe water claims. So you kind of want to get a feel for their adjuster if you call them, what kind of claims they handle, how long they've been in business, how big is their company? Is it just one public adjuster just kind of roaming around, or is there a whole team? What kind of claims have they handled? Have they handled claims this large or this small? So you want to ask all these questions. A website, you know, there's a National Association, NAPIA, National Association of Public Insurance Adjusters. California has their own association, so there's Texas that you could go on, and then you can find accredited public adjusters that are licensed, that have been vetted by the state.
Okay. And then taking that step further beyond in understanding their level of experience, you know, whether they're new or, you know, they've been around for a while, is that a matter of just talking to them, having conversations, getting a feel, or do you have any thoughts about, you know, evaluating their specific experience?
No, I would take notes on how many claims they've handled, you know, how long have they been in business for, what kind of claims do they handle, and I would want to get references, right? Like when the clients ask us, we'll send them all the references, for especially claims pertaining to theirs. If I have an investor that's got a 6-unit, I'll go past our clients that we had with 6-units, kind of similar with a fire, and that way they can call and kind of feel comfortable that, hey, we've worked these claims, and that makes the client feel more comfortable, right? So the references, I would say, are probably the most legit thing you can get from a public adjuster.
Okay. Would you say, is there any risk in general? So let's say you make a claim and use the services of a public adjuster, and, you know, they do well for you, so you get a bit more than the insurance company had originally intended. Is there risk of the insurance company saying, oh, this is a guy who likes to, you know, get everything that he can, maybe we'll jack up his premiums a little bit, and they put that, you know, in their risk tables and so on. Is there any risk of that? Your premium's going up because you're somebody who likes to work with public adjusters?
That's a good question. No, they can't raise your premium based on hiring a public adjuster. Can they raise your premiums from a single claim? No, they can't. Based on one single claim, they can't. But if we get this question a lot, and the question I would ask back is, have they not raised your premium in the last 5-10 years? Because I feel like the premiums get raised every year. Looking back at our properties, every year they've raised the premium. We just actually got a letter from one of the insurance companies saying, because of all the things, we're going to be raising our premiums again, our third year in a row, we'll try to keep them low. So we haven't had any claims, but yet we're getting our premiums raised. So it doesn't matter. Now, if you have 3 claims in a year, can they drop you? Yeah, of course. If you become high risk, they can definitely drop you. But they can't raise your premium based on just one claim.
Okay,
or hiring a public adjuster for that matter.
Okay, so your risks, if you will, are more based on the frequency or the number of claims that you make on a policy, not just that, hey, this guy made a claim on his policy, really played hardball, and, you know, got all of the value of his policy out of it. That's not likely to happen.
No, and policy premiums are not figured out for you per se. It's the area you're in. You know, how old is the home? What is the area? What is the chance of a loss? How far is the fire extinguisher? Fire hydrant? All those things go into play. Does your claim history go into effect when you start getting? Yeah, of course it does. But if you get insured with an insurance company, all of a sudden you file a claim, they legally can't raise your premium based on that claim.
Okay. So this may be a question to not handle publicly, maybe something to discuss privately with a potential client. But I'm curious if there are any insurance companies out there that are essentially worse to work with or just harder to get a payment out of. Does that really make sense? Harder 100%. To make a claim against?
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you, I don't want to mention on here, but yes. there's ones that come to my mind right away, but we see their name come in or we have a client call, I'm like, wow, we got, you know, we have to deal with these guys. And then there's ones we're like, okay, great. We actually know their adjusters. We know this team. This is going to be awesome. We know that our client is going to not only get like max settlement, it's going to happen quick. Whereas other carriers, it's going to be a fight for every penny and it's going to definitely delay. It's going to be a longer claim process.
So would that be a question to when you're shopping around or asking around for public adjusters, or when you have a public adjuster you want to work with, would that be a question to ask about is XYZ insurance?
Who's better to ask what insurance company is good, which one's bad than the public? We fight them all. Like, this is all we do, right? Your agent's not going to tell you which one. All the ones he's selling are good, right? Because no matter which one he signs you up with, he's going to get a premium.
True.
So the best person to ask is the people that are in the trenches that are actually fighting the insurance companies that are battling them every day.
Okay. So another thing that you've mentioned is the specialization of public adjusters, and this guy works on commercial roofs, this guy works on water damage, that kind of a thing. How many public adjusters would a given real estate investor need to quote unquote have on our team or like know about, considering the specializations of different types of damage that public adjusters?
And I wouldn't say different. I would say the amounts. Some public adjusters are more residential, more residential roofing. But for investors and landlords, one public adjuster should be, as long as they're a team and it's a large, it's actually a bigger firm, not just one PA, and they have a whole team, then one PA firm can handle the whatever loss you have, whether it's a fire, whether you guys had a water, pipe break, or a large, roofing claim. One PA should handle everything. It's the same claims process. How you settle it and the process and what you present to the insurance company and the specialty, when we get interviewed for investors or landlords with associations or management companies, they ask us, what claims you handled, how many have you handled, what is your experience in this and this and this. So.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. Great. Well, this is a very interesting topic, and I'm going to be, maybe adjusting my strategy a little bit here and bringing in a public adjuster on my team.
What we're seeing now, it's the light shining, like the public adjusters are kind of, it's coming out more and more, where more people are using them. I mean, I think it used to be where 95% of claims went without actually getting, I don't know what that number is now, it might be around still the same, but like 95 or 90% went undisputed, meaning no one actually looked them over, no one actually fought the insurance company. People just took their settlement. Happens all the time. But now more and more people are using the help of a public adjuster to help. Again, not only maximize their claim, but take the stress and actually get the process and actually settle the claim quickly.
Absolutely. I personally can very much accept and acknowledge that a professional who specializes in a given area that is opaque to me, and I would say that I don't necessarily understand, like insurance and making insurance claims, could add a lot of value to that process. And also, I value my time very highly, and taking that task off of my plate would have a high value to me as well. So, great. I love it. I'm glad that we got a chance to learn about this today. Right now, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsor.
One thing all wealthy people have in common is that they meticulously track their wealth and spending and how their wealth is growing over time, where their wealth is coming from, and everything in between. And we have a free service for Passive Wealth Strategy Show listeners that you can get right now by using our link in the description to Personal Capital. I personally use Personal Capital to track my income, my spending, my wealth, how it's growing, where I'm making my money, and everything like that. And I recommend it to all of our listeners. You can get started for free right now by using our link to Personal Capital in the description below. Now back to the show.
All right, Andy, I've got three questions I ask every guest on the show. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's go.
Great. First question, what is the best investment you ever made other than in your education?
Best investment besides education, all the rentals we purchased. I think, you talk about real estate, it's a real estate podcast show. Buying real estate has given us kind of the freedom to not only for myself grow the business and not take money out of the business, but kind of the stress-free life of, hey, you have all these properties, they're bringing in income, you can kind of live comfortably, like grow your business, your family has what they need. You don't have to stress about, hey, the business is not doing good or we're still growing or pulling out loans, right? Because you have that real estate, that cushion that's coming in each month. So to me, that's probably the best thing we've ever done is all the investments we've made in real estate.
Love it. We're all about real estate here. So we had the best investment. Now we go to the other side of that coin, the worst investment. What is the worst investment you ever made?
Oh, wow. The worst investment? Let me see. The worst investment I ever made would be, you know what? I try to grow too quickly. And I guess the investing in the business, not knowing what I was doing and going, you know, gun hold for everything and just spending money left and right because I didn't know any better, was probably the worst investment because then it took me time to recuperate and kind of get back. So the, you know, the tip or advice there is, you know, start slow. Don't just start jumping into stuff, you know, do your due diligence, get your hands dirty before you just start spending money and hiring people and, you know, try and grow too quick.
Interesting. So it sounds like kind of reading between the lines a little bit, maybe you overhired at the beginning too much.
Overhired, overspent, just try to grow so quickly, you know, and invested all this money into it. And then everything backfired, right? Because I didn't know any better. I was learning a new industry as well. I knew kind of one aspect of it. So.
Makes sense. It's hard to balance that excitement and knowing that you need to hire people to grow. But if you hire too many people, you won't have enough stuff for them to do, at least initially. And, you know, got to walk through paces. So that makes sense.
Definitely a life learning lesson. Hey.
Part of entrepreneurship. My favorite question here at the end of the show is, what is the most important lesson you've learned in business and investing?
You know, don't give up, I guess. I guess there's so much knowledge right now with YouTube and everything about, you know, what it is to be an entrepreneur and all these motivational speakers yelling and shouting. Not every day is going to be glorious. There's going to be days where you wake up and you don't feel like doing anything, or you get tired or you want to take a nap. It's normal. So my lesson is just take day by day, but make a step to do something each day to get to what your goal is. So whether it's, you know, read 5 pages or whatever that goal is you have to make a step every day, but not every day is going to be perfect. You don't need motivational speakers or all this other stuff, you know, to motivate you. You just got to keep doing it and just not giving up.
I love it. And it can be tough at times, but if you push through, keep moving every day, you'll be surprised what you can get done. Andy, thank you so much for joining us today, teaching us lessons about public adjusting that I didn't know. I learned a lot today, and I hope our listeners did as well. If folks want to reach out, if they want to get in touch, if they want to learn more about what you're up to or anything like that, where can they track you down?
They can, you know, for your listeners, I'll leave my cell phone. They can really call me at 708-655-4186, 708-655-4186. They can go on our website, allcityadjusting.com. They can Google All City Adjusting. They can email us at info@allcityadjusting.com. Or if they do go on our website, there is actually a free PDF of how to handle your own claim if they want to jump on that road.
If you want to do it, but hey, this whole discussion is about
you. There's a whole PDF article, a little booklet that they could download. We'll send them a booklet kind of how to handle their own claim.
Great. Well, thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars, if you don't mind, you guys. I appreciate that so, so much. That helps other people learn about the show because that helps us rank higher in the Apple Podcasts ecosystem. And I'm always honest with you guys. That gives me a nice little warm and fuzzy feeling because I get to see that you're engaging with the content and you're building wealth on Main Street along with us. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one. Bye-bye.